Welcome to the Full Money Audio Commentary. This being Friday, October 14th, it's the big picture, long-term audio for the various different asset classes. This week, we've seen the majority of markets rally in the early part of the week. There's a number have got right up to the upper sides of their ranges. But something that I have been thinking quite a bit about this week is the Dow Gold ratio. The ratio has been a useful indicator of various cycles between stock markets and commodities for at least 100 years. I can say 100 years with relative confidence because we have data on Bloomberg that goes back to the early 1920s. I'd love to see similar data for even further back if it existed. But what we have over the last 100 years has been a secular advance in terms of stock markets that hit peaks in 1929, in 1966 or 67, and in 1999. Then we've seen secular declines of stock markets relative to gold. Those bottomed in the early 30s, in around 1980, and the current decline has moved from over 40 in 1999 down to 6.88 today. So we've had 10 years, well, more like 11 years of a secular bull market in gold. Gold remains the one of the best performers over the last decade. It's one of the only asset classes to have churned out a positive return every year for the last 10 years. 2011 doesn't look like it's going to be any different. When you see a ratio like that and it's moved a great deal, it's probably a better idea to look at it on a logarithmic scale. Because when you look at it in nominal terms, you see that the ratio has moved from 40 down to 35 in the course of about a year. That doesn't really require a very large move in either of the two constituents of the ratio, the Dow Jones Industrials Average or the gold price. But when you get down to 6.88 and the median low has been somewhere below 5, and in the early 30s, it was closer to 2.5, and in the early 80s, it was actually below 2. Well, when you get down to a level that's closer to about 6, and you want to go to 5, well, that requires a very large move in either or both the constituents of the ratio. Now, if we look at the consistency of the ratio, then there is absolutely no reason to expect that the ratio isn't going to continue to compress. Gold has been going up for 10 years. Everything points towards gold eventually ending in mania. And that is what would be required to get this ratio down in significant numbers to an important low. Now, we look at the gold chart, and it's been rising for the last 7 or 8 years quite consistently for the last 9 years, really. The last 2 years have been considerably more consistent from a chart perspective in terms of supply and demand than the previous seven. From the early 2000s all the way through to 2009, you had a progression of relatively similar ranges, one above another. Consolidations of 18 months were the norm. We saw upward breaks in 2001, 2003, 2007, 2009. Each of those l relatively lengthy consolidations was completed by an acceleration upwards, an emphatic completion of the range, and then a race up to the next high. Then that acceleration was completed with large downward dynamics. You had a violent pullback, then you moved into another lengthy 18-month consolidation. Well, that all changed in 2010 because then we had an upward break in consecutive years. Then we had another upward break in 2011. In fact, we had two upward breaks in 2011. So that tells us that the pace of the advance is picking up. That tells us one thing. It tells us that demand is becoming increasingly dominant relative to supply. We then had this big pullback from $1,900 to $1,550. That shook a lot of people out. And gold now appears to be in the process of building support. It's found support in the region of the 200-day moving average. That's exactly where it would be expected to find support in the context of a consistent medium-term uptrend. We are probably going to see it, given the size of the decline that it has posted, then the chances are that it's going to spend some time building support above the 200 AMA before assailing the peaks once more and reasserting the secular uptrend. So, from a medium-term perspective, gold continues to look like it's going to continue to hit new highs. If we look at the other side of the ratio, then you have the Dow Jones, and the Dow has been basically going sideways for 10 years. At points, it has been considerably below where it is right now. It's currently at 11,000 and change, and the market has pulled back. It's found support below its 200-day moving average. The sentiment towards the index isn't particularly bullish. Over the last 2 weeks, we've had an emphatic advance. It looked like it was going to break to the downside in early October. It's pushed right back up to test the other side of the range. At the chart seminar, we have a rule of thumb that if the dynamic of the failure is greater than the dynamic of the fail, then the chances are it's going to go back up and test the other side of the range. Well, that's exactly what we've seen in the last 2 weeks. The big question now is whether it can sustain a move up out of this range, back above the 200-day moving average, and reassert the overall uptrend. We've described Wall Street as being in a secular valuation contraction, where we see rising dividend yields and compressing PE ratios. That has happened probably more in Europe than we've seen on Wall Street, but there's certainly been a degree of that on Wall Street so far. Sentiment towards the US economy in particular is particularly bearish, but one does have to ask the question as to what degree the Dow Jones reflects the US economy, because so many of the companies there are major multinationals. They have global businesses. They're much more influenced by the health of the global economy than particularly of the US economy. One doesn't buy the economy, we buy companies, and the USA is replete with major multinationals. So when we go back and think about the Dow Gold ratio, the Dow Jones looks like it has been ranging for 10 years. That range is not over. The secular valuation contraction has not ended. But it does not look like it is going to break down out of that range. This range is quite similar to the range that the Dow Jones put in between the mid-60s and 1980. That was also a period of secular valuation contraction. Now, this time around, the S&P has got a more well-defined range. The peaks are pretty level. The Dow Jones has been able to push on to new high ground, and that's probably more to do with the fact that it's got some of the biggest multinationals in there, whereas the S&P might be a bit more weighted towards the US economy, particularly because it's got such a high weighting of financial companies that have direct leverage to the US economy. The last time around, when we had a secular bull market in gold, the Dow Jones pretty much went sideways, and the really big advances happened in the gold price. So when we think once more about this ratio, it does suggest that one doesn't need to be particularly bearish about the Dow Jones to anticipate that the Dow Gold ratio can continue to compress, because gold is quite capable of doing the running. We talk at the chart seminar about the psychological perception stages of major bull and bear markets. Major bull markets start out in disbelief. People don't want to know about it. People haven't heard about it. Even the people who are bullish are cautious. The people that are very bullish are seen as mavericks. People are still hung up about the failings of the market. Back in 2002, you still met people who didn't want to hear about gold. I've met people who said, "Don't mention that word in my presence." They were so disappointed with how they had handled the last bull market in gold. They've been so disappointed throughout the course of a more than 20-year bear market that they were completely disillusioned with the whole idea that you could have a commodity bull market. Well, you fast forward from then all the way through to 2007, and people are really starting to get the message. We can say that from 2009 onwards, people really did get the message because the chart action got that bit more consistent. That tells us that more people are interested, more people want this. You have the people that are holding gold in their portfolio. Those are the people that are interested in participating in a major bull market. Then you have the people that hold gold, as in physically, in their hands, hold gold. They like the security. They like the luster. They like the feel. And they like the solidity of this market. We've seen that governments have taken on massive private liabilities. They've been printing like stink. The volatility in the market has increased considerably over the last few years. Now, there are a number of reasons for that. Certainly, high-frequency trading is not immune, certainly not guiltless in this environment. The advent of leveraged ETFs and reweightings might also have an impact. But some of the blame has got to rest with central banks. They have increased money supply. They've been forced to do that because the velocity of money has decreased so alarmingly. The Fed, through its Operation Twist, has also increased money supply really quite considerably. They're attempting to flood the market with liquidity in an effort to kickstart economic growth. They want to get interest rates down as low as they can. They want to get refinancing rates on mortgages down as low as they can. The effect is that not all of the money that they want to gets siphoned into the economy. It also gets siphoned out and put into productive assets by speculators. And that is exactly what we've seen with the flow of assets into Asia, into commodities, into credit default swaps, and into various derivatives. There is a flood of liquidity being put out there by the various central banks, not just the Fed, but also in Europe and in the Bank of England, in Japan, Switzerland. And this isn't a trend that's about to reverse. So the market is awash with liquidity. Volatility has increased. People's faith in the financial markets has decreased as a result. People aren't used to dealing with markets that can move. For example, the Dow Jones in the last week has moved 1,000 points. And that's on an 11,000-point index. So we're seeing markets move in the region of 10% in 1 week. And the problem, of course, is that it's going up 1 week and down the next. People's faith in the financial system has been shaken. People's faith in the central bank to protect the integrity of their currencies has also been shaken. And their answer is to hold something that's solid, hold something that simply can't be wished into existence. And that's gold, and increasingly the other precious metals. So that is helping to drive this bull market. And that is also helping it to find support on pullbacks. When we look around the world, people in Europe and in the USA are buying gold for its solidity. But people in Asia are buying gold because it has been the traditional money, because it is a symbol of wealth, that you can literally wear your wealth around your neck, and that in something that was very evident in the 1950s in the USA, which was keeping up with the Joneses, well, has pushed on and moved into keeping up with the Wangs or the Chus in Asia. The middle class has expanded, and when everyone's wealth increases, what people are most interested in is distinguishing themselves from those around them, and they do that by the, accumulating the trappings of wealth. So, gold in that context is one of the major trappings of wealth. There is a dichotomy emerging, particularly in the USA, where shares that appeal to the lowest common denominator, people that are scrimping for every penny, are doing quite well. People who have are who are in a higher income bracket are also doing very well. The earnings of luxury brands continue to beat analysts' expectations. People in the middle are getting creamed. People in the middle classes in the USA and in much of Europe are being squeezed continually. They're seeing their wages drop, the services that they can avail of decreasing, and their pensions disappearing. So the people in the middle are feeling the most pressure. The companies that appeal to those people aren't doing particularly well. People that the companies that prosper in a down market are doing particularly well. Those that are benefiting from the growth of the global economy and the growth of the global middle class are also doing very well. So while we have the shrinking of the middle class in Europe and the USA, we have an expanding middle class in most of Asia and Latin America. In Asia, you have hundreds of millions of people that have been lifted out of poverty and into the middle classes. This is a secular trend. Asia remains the center of global GDP growth. Per capita consumption of just about everything continues to increase. That isn't about to be derailed anytime soon. What we do have is occasional periods where growth slows down. Most of Asia has been engaged in monetary policy tightening over the last 18 months. China, in particular, has been clamping down on its banking sector. It has been attempting to engineer a soft landing in the property market. They're talking about building 1 million low-cost or affordable homes in the next few years. So they're trying their best to control inflationary pressures. India has been raising interest rates aggressively. They are now starting to talk about finally allowing multinational retailers into the food markets. This isn't because they want the competition. This is because they want the supply chain management that various multinationals will bring with them. The basic refrigeration of goods isn't currently a feature of the Indian market. The reason that the monsoon is such a can have such a deleterious effect on the economy is because there isn't the supply chain management to manage food supplies. These are all efforts that would help to bring down the impact of commodity prices on inflationary measures. But at present, commodity prices continue to weigh heavily on inflationary measures. And that's why the medium-term peak that looks for to have formed in the continuous commodity index is important, because that would suggest that commodity prices are probably coming down. Brent crude has rallied back up to about $116, sorry, below $116. It was weaker yesterday. It continues to look like this is a progression of lower rally highs. It's more likely to go down here than up. With monetary tightening continuing in Asia, slow economic growth in the USA, and the continued problems in the Eurozone, then this remains a low growth environment generally. but Asia remains the center of GDP growth globally. So most of those Asian markets have pulled back sharply. The vast majority have at least bounced. Some of the best performers, such as Indonesia, Thailand, the Philippines, have bounced most emphatically. They're going to need to find support above their recent lows and a pullback to really suggest that demand is getting back into dominance for the medium term. They've all experienced technical deterioration, so we can't have the same degree of certainty on this occasion that we would have had last year, because the technical deterioration has been that much more. What we do know is that valuations have contracted considerably, particularly in China. And in China, you're also starting to see the Chinese sovereign wealth fund beginning to move in and buy up banking shares. China remains a policy-driven market, and important lows in the market in 2005 and 2008 were formed by the government moving in to support the stock market. We have an inkling that that may be occurring right now. That would suggest that China, while pessimism is ubiquitous towards the country because of, I think, primarily because there's a certain amount of Schadenfreude, there's a certain amount of sour grapes. China is an emerging superpower in a way that we haven't seen from a nation in quite a long time. China also has massive imbalances. China's corruption is a real problem. China had a developing property bubble. It remains to be seen to what extent they can engineer a decline. But China also has 3 trillion in foreign currency reserves. That's not a small number. What we do know is that valuations have contracted. These shares are not expensive. Pessimism is, well, let's call it bearishness, is at a peak, and we're starting to see the government beginning to move in to support the market. That's a recipe for higher prices. When a market has been the worst performer in the world for one or even two consecutive years, then the chances of a third consecutive year are relatively unlikely in this environment. When we think about where the opportunities are going to be, they're almost certainly going to be in Asia, and they're going to be in the companies that are leveraged to Asian growth. If we go right back to that Dow gold ratio, at some point, that ratio will hit bottom. At that point, gold will be a sell, and the Dow will be a buy for another secular advance that could last upwards of 25 years. That's not something many people are thinking about right now because pessimism towards the US economy is also at an incredible level. One of the potential game changers is that the USA could become energy independent. Shale gas has changed the energy outlook for natural gas globally. The USA could potentially become an exporter of natural gas for the first time. Natural gas prices have been locked below $4 for a considerable period. Sorry, in the region of $4 for a considerable period. A large number of the drilling rigs have moved to exploiting shale oil. The Bakken Shale in North Dakota is one example that has the potential to increase onshore supply, and it's not the only shale oil reserve on the US mainland. So, with lower energy prices, that could help to turn around the deficit problem quite quickly. We could have, it would no longer be in the USA's interest to have ultra-low energy prices, but they would be below where they are today. The USA would suddenly no longer need to import huge quantities of oil. That could easily reverse the deficit problem. That could take 10 or 15 years. That would slot in very comfortably with a reversal of the Dow gold ratio and the resumption of, or I suppose, the beginning of a new secular bull market for the Dow Jones at some point within the next 10 to 15 years. So when we look at long-term ratios like that, it pays not to be one-sided. Any ratio is dependent on two constituents. Gold is currently one of the best performing assets globally. It isn't always going to be. And that means that we need to think long and hard about an exit strategy when it does begin to move into a much quicker pace of advance. Rather than thinking about how high gold is going to go, one would be better off spending time thinking about what would have to happen for me to sell. Where would be the best time to increase my position, but when would be the best time to lighten the position? The best time to increase a position is following a reversion. The best time to lighten is following a major acceleration. What we have a tendency to do is to become addicts. We just want one more new high. What we really should be thinking about is, if we get a new high, I'll lighten the position. I think with that, I will leave you for the weekend and wish all the best to all of you.